Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. We're actually doing two tapings as we did the Markets Call Wednesday, which I thought was great. So, how are you doing? How's the week been?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Very ready for the weekend. Hopefully, we won't get any surprises. A good thing to wish for.
Sorry, I had to close the door. I mean, hopefully we have a good surprise. I think everyone doesn't want an escalation, a further escalation of the war in the Middle East. It looks like we may get that as we're kind of chatting briefly before. So let's kind of dive right in. What were your big takeaways over this past week? Market reactions, everything with Fed, anything around the big bill?
So let's start with the Fed. As expected, a bit unclear in terms of internal logic. So they are keeping their good news cut, even though they've raised a bit inflation and raised a bit unemployment. I think their logic is that uncertainty is still high, but not as high as it used to be. And uncertainty is going to fall over the summers because I think the tariff have yet to show up in inflation. So they need to wait through the summer to see what happens to tariff. And I suppose what happens next is that they cut. But the bottom line is they are still confident in a soft landing. They kept their two cuts this year, but kept the Fed funds 25 basis point higher in subsequent years, which is a bit illogical because I would have thought the brunt of the tariff impact would be this year. Anyway, it is what it is, as I keep saying. It's not my place to tell the Fed what to do. I just have to try to figure out what they are up to. And the signaling, I think, was consistent with a September cut. The question to me is, do they cut 25 or 50? Market is priced for 25. I don't think there is enough in the data to have a strong conviction of on 50. We need to see more of a slowdown. So, for instance, I have this new recession indicator based on unemployment claims. If that keeps going up at the current pace through the summer, at some point I'll call for 50. But at this stage, it's hard to have a conviction.
I think that makes sense. Just before our call, I was looking at bigging up Citibank, but the Citi Economic Surprise Index for the US, which is the lowest it's been in like a year. And then the maybe I don't know, what's the accuracy of the driving and all, but the Citi Inflation Surprise Index, which is the lowest it's been in 5 years. I mean, I guess they could address two things with a 50 basis point cut, because it does seem like things are slowing. And I understand that their point. I was really surprised about them increasing the end of the year inflation. I mean, 2/3, that's a decent amount, right? Considering it's been pretty sticky.
It is a decent amount. At the same time, it's not that big. I continue to think they overestimate inflation, that the slowdown we have, the nervousness of the consumers and businesses, is going to prevent businesses from passing on the cost increase. But they are the guys who decide, so they
It
are
is
going
what it is. Yeah, exactly.
reactive to the data.
I mean, obviously there's many issues going on, like we said, the Middle East. Obviously there's tariff stuff as well. There's a whole bunch of other things. There's a big, there's plenty of things that could affecting interest rates in the USA as an example.
But Andrew, even in terms of Middle East, Viresh gave us a really interesting presentation where he looked at a worst case scenario. Okay, oil could stay go to 120, maybe a bit higher for Brent, and stay there. But even then, I mean, the impact is likely to raise headline, but not core inflation because the economy is weakening. And the bottom line is the US economy is a services-driven economy, so we don't make things. So oil prices are less important for that reason. So even if things really turn bad in the Middle East, we are relatively insulated. I would also add that the US is a net exporter of energy. I mean, the energy balance in the US is about 3.5 percentage points of GDP, of which oil is 1 percentage point. Okay, we're not Saudi Arabia, but we're still well placed. I mean, we'll have an increase in income. Most of it is going to get saved because it will go to the shalers, and they are not going to spend like crazy. They've become very disciplined. So we'll have part of the economy that pays more for energy, the consumers, businesses, and then a small part of the economy that will get that extra money and is not going to spend it, so it will get saved, which will be negative for inflation, negative for our trade deficit. So the administration will be pleased. But the bottom line is we're big, we are a net exporter, and we are services driven. So it's not going to make much of a difference.
Right. And I think interesting, I think the market, which the correlation was not was the other way, but the last kind of 3 or 4 days, you see the dollar doing well when oil was rallying. And I think that's probably the right thing because the main alternatives to the dollar, kind of Euro, Japan, China, they were all, that's all a clear negative for them, as significant oil importers.
100%. I mean, so that first of all, they are much more in manufacturing than we are. I mean, think Germany, and Japan. And then they are very dependent on energy. We're not.
Yeah, that makes sense. But interesting. So the 50, I guess that feed a 50 basis point cut would clearly feed into Antonio's kind of trade or two trades being long the very front end, and then also potentially could be neutral for the back end, just the whole curve kind of steepens, I guess.
Yeah, it depends if they are good news or bad news cuts. I mean, if they are good news cuts, I mean the back end could go up, but and we also have the issue of the US deficit getting larger. We can talk about that. If they are bad news cut, the back end could come down, though you will have the deficit pushing in the opposite direction. So there's a lot riding on how resilient the US economy turns out over the summer.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm just trying to close something because some of you, it's skipping a little bit, but I think it's okay. So what's happening with the big, beautiful bill?
What's happening with there's something that, okay, so big picture, as I expected, the Senate Republicans cannot agree among themselves. Also, the White House has much less influence in the Senate than in the House. So I doubt the bill will be ready for President Trump's signature by July 4th. I think it's more the end of July. But there is a little quirk here, which is very, very interesting. There's been this talk in Congress about telling the Fed to stop paying interest rate on reserve, something proposed by Ted Cruz. And in effect, this would be a really radical change because it would force the Fed to go back to the pre-crisis operating framework, which would mean a much, much, much smaller balance sheet. But the trick is, how do you get that measure through Congress? And you probably cannot, because the Republicans don't have the filibuster-proof majority in the Senate that would be needed. And I thought getting it adopted through reconciliation, so through the budget, would be tricky because of the procedures. There is someone very important, but not getting a lot of attention, called the Senate parliamentarian. It's a lady, actually, who holds is currently holding the job, and she decides what can and cannot get into a reconciliation bill. And in the current version of the bill, there was a provision that would have lowered salaries, Fed sal the salaries of Fed staff, to save 1.4 billion that would have been, I guess, paid into the budget. And she has just struck that provision, because under reconciliation, every part of the law has to be strictly related to the budget. You cannot have reforms of social securities.
Ah, okay.
So she's just ruled that this provision cannot get into the budget bill under reconciliation, which to me confirms that even if the Republicans manage to get that no more interest on reserve at the Fed provision, it just wouldn't pass the Senate. It wouldn't pass
Okay, fine. So it's not
reconciliation.
something really to be concerned.
Yeah.
And do you see them reducing what the expected kind of negative right now, the expected negative impact on the debt?
No. We there's What we have at the moment is the House version, and from what something quite close to the House version, and it adds a percentage point of GDP to the budget next year and consolidation in subsequent year. I think this is a general plan. Next year is an election year. Every administration, everyone, typically consolidates after elections, so I don't think the plan, that part of the plan has changed. No.
Okay, great. And is the market missing? Are you surprised by any market reactions right now, or?
So I'm watching, of course, the dollar and 10-year yields, because a big focus is, is the dollar losing its safe haven
Yeah.
status.
I started Ken Rogoff's book last night.
Sorry?
I started Ken Rogoff's book last night
Ah,
when
excellent
he was
book.
talking about it on Bilal's podcast.
And excellent podcast as
Yeah.
well. So we're getting mixed signal, and also, this correlation with oil and the dollar, as you said, it also reflects a difference in dependency on oil of the US versus key economies. I think this sort of status it change, it's not going to happen like in one go. We're not going to wake up one morning and the safe haven status is completely gone. So we're getting mixed signals, in part because you never know what changes in exchange rate really reflects.
Yeah.
But overall, I think we're still going into this in the same direction, which is, the basically a multipolar world, including in currencies. And I think, yeah, the dollar is still losing its safe haven.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think it's interesting to see kind of how fixed income performs in relation to the dollar, because the equities that can easily break down. It has broken down in the past where strong equity, US equity market is actually negative for the dollar. The US investors, I guess, more risk taking and investing overseas. But fixed income part, I think, is the more interesting one because, say, in the last 3 months, yeah, we've seen European fixed income, mainly because they've been cutting, generally definitely trading stronger. And the euro has been a lot stronger in most of the currencies versus the US, versus the dollar. But going forward, if the Fed starts, if the ECB pauses or has one more and then pauses, and the Fed starts cutting, let's see how that does. Does that actually start bringing in significant fixed income flows into the US? So I think that would be an interesting one to look for. It doesn't, and I also saw that Liang posted something that the skew in euro, which has been clearly for upside for a while, is now flipped. Now, some of that may be for downside. So some of that may be just heavy positioning in a kind of bullish euro, weak dollar. Some of that can be kind of what we're saying is the skew has jumped so much from very heavy puts to very heavy calls on oil. Euro could, having some of that spillover effect, and people are getting buying potential euro puts if oil did really rally. Now, maybe short term, this looks like hopefully there'll be some kind of resolution in the Middle East. But I'd say those are things to watch, and that skew, let's see if that skew goes back for puts. As sorry for euro calls, dollar puts. So, and looking ahead, yeah, what are your thoughts? What are your big takeaways for the upcoming week?
So this week we have Chair Powell's semi-annual testimony to Congress, Humphrey
That's a
Hawking.
big deal. Yep.
It's a big deal. I think he's going for once. Actually, I think the questions will be more interesting than the answer because we know what he's going to say. He's going to say, the best we can do for the U.S. economy is to keep our credibility. There is too much uncertainty for us to start cutting now. We're seeing the uncertainty come down, but we need to see what happens to tariff over the, what happens to the impact of tariff over the summer. So basically, repeat the FOMC. But it will be interesting is so to see if support for Fed independence has weakened within Congress. And my guess is that in the House it has, and we're likely to see fairly aggressive questions from a House member along the line of why are you not cutting?
Republicans or both sides?
I think Republicans, I mean,
Maybe very left, yeah, Democrat, but yes, fine, maybe Republicans. Okay.
But the really important one of the two chambers is the Senate, because that's where the it would be of changing the Federal Reserve
Yeah.
Act, for instance, removing this provision on the payment of interest on reserve. That's where it would be happening, and where you would need the filibuster-proof majority. So the Republicans
And
do.
he'll take questions from both Congress and the Senate.
So yeah, on Tuesday it's the Senate, and then on Wednesday it's going to be the House. And so far, I mean, up to now, support for Fed independence in the Senate has been really bipartisan. So hopefully, it remains that way. But I am expecting more aggressive questions than in the last Humphrey Hawkins. And yes, we could have some left-wing progressive senators. I could see Senator Warren, for instance, asking pointed question
Yeah.
on why Chair Powell is not cutting now. So this one is a big one. It's on Tuesday with the Senate. Very
So
important.
market moving. I guess, yeah, I guess you could put up you and Antonio could put together some scenarios of kind of what market impacts may be, and what are the potential kind of, I guess you're right, less about his preset comments, more about his reaction to questions, or kind of a hostile environment if he sees that and what that may mean. But yeah.
So that's the Fed. We also have speeches from New York Fed President Williams, Cleveland Fed President Hammack, and a few others. I mean, real speeches. They are also introductory statement because the Fed has its Fed Listen event, and so these are just pro forma welcome statements. The real speeches, the more interesting one, are Williams Hammack. Williams, because he's a New York Fed president, permanent member of the FOMC. Hamac, Cleveland Fed president, I always pay attention, special attention, because she clearly is an independent thinker. You know, in the Fed, we have a greater influence of the chair over the committees. And for instance, at the BOE, for instance, here in America, it would be unthinkable to have the FOMC member vote against the chair. While in the BOE, that has been instances where that has happened. So, independent, very practical. She's a market person. You know, she run Goldman's repo book during the crisis. So, someone with a good grasp of market and economics. So, always very interesting to see what she says. And in the past, she had said, given the uncertainty, it makes sense for the Fed to wait, but once they go and start cutting, they could go faster. So she's been
Interesting.
mentioning the risk of the 50 basis point cut, basically. In terms of data, okay, we have data that's important for me, but maybe not so important for markets. That's the data on consumption and income. So each month we get retail sales that get a lot of market attention, but it's actually only a subset of consumption. Retail sales is mainly goods and restaurant spending. With personal spending, we get the whole spectrum. We'll get also the savings rate of household, which is super important because that's where you see that people have lost confidence. They are saving more. So let's see if that continues. We'll get the
But
revision.
I'm always concerned, like, yes, so if savings goes up, that means people are more cautious. But couldn't you say if savings is going down that people are in such a difficult situation that they're not able to save? Or is it
So
more traditionally the relationship is really a conservative, people being more conservative with their money, preludes a general significant slowdown in the economy because everyone's starting to get cautious?
it's more on average what you just said, the latter. But you're making a really important point here, which is that there is a subset of households that is really stressed out financially. And you see it with credit card delinquencies that are at financial crisis level for some for smaller banks, especially that tend to have lower quality customers. And it's because you have a fringe of households that are really hurting and paying for necessities with credit card and not being able to keep up. So that's something definitely to keep an eye on. Though on average, the consumer is doing well. I mean, not as well as it used to, but getting more cautious. And then the new data star of the week, I think, is jobless claims because they've been moving up quite, I mean, strongly. At the same time, there are issues with the unemployment rate, with the quality of the data in the unemployment rate that comes from the household survey that we get monthly, while here we get weekly data, completely independent source. I have this new recession indicator that has been developed by the Richmond Fed and that I will keep updating. Very far from signaling recession, but moving definitely in that direction. So it's going to be a key driver of whether I start calling for a 50 basis point cut in
So
the
is
future.
it jobless claims or continuing claims or
So
both?
jobless claim, they give you two. It's compiled. It's actually compiled by the Department of Labor based on actual payment by states. Jobless agencies. They give you initial and they give you continuing. And continuing is the one I'm using.
That's what I thought. That's what,
Okay, other data less important. Oh, we also have the third revision of the first quarter GDP. Nothing, I mean, no market moving news there. Also, data we're going to get the S&P PMIs, which are important for the market, but for me, not so important because GDP has decoupled from PMIs. We'll get consumer confidence, both the conference board and the New University of Michigan. What to look for there in the conference board index is the labor market difference, the difference between jobs plentiful and job hard to find. It's quite well correlated with the unemployment rate, so another indicator.
How has that
University.
been moving recently? I know that it was a big focus
It's
for a while. Yeah.
been getting weaker, so
Okay.
people find it, which is not consistent with the unemployment rate we got with the monthly labor market data, but with other part of the survey, like the job finding rates, the labor market is cooling.
Well, yeah.
University of Michigan, people will be paying attention to inflation expectations. Though interestingly, that is a topic that didn't come up at all at the FOMC, which suggests that the FOMC members have decided that it's not an indicator they are going to pay attention to. They are going to pay attention to
It's
breaking.
whipping around a lot, yeah. Especially the 1 year, yeah.
Okay, then we are going to get home prices, home sales, and then we're not going to learn anything new. The residential investment is going nowhere. Fortunately, it's actually contracting. Fortunately, it's now a small part of GDP, but it's not good in it's just showing that the economy is slowing. And that's why you keep getting strong comments from President Trump saying the Fed needs to cut.
Yeah.
We had the head of the financial of the financial housing authority making the same. So the agency that oversees Fannie and Freddie
Yeah.
also making strong calls on the Fed to cut, which in my view are counterproductive. But there we are. We're probably going to get
Right.
more
There's other
comments.
things going on at Fannie and Freddie too. Whether that gets privatized
Oh, yeah.
as well. I guess he's
Yeah.
trying to curry favors with the administration, but yeah.
Exactly.
I
We'll
mean, de
get.
definitely speaking to friends in Florida and Texas, I would say there's a starting to be a lot of properties on the market. The markets are definitely softening there. I think probably surprising less in say in the Northeast, but definitely in the Sun Belt areas. Seems like housing either just from overbuilt or people moving back or what, but it seems like prices are softening there, no question.
No question, the economy is slowing. So, if the Fed wasn't so worried about its independence and the impact of the tariff, it would
Yeah.
have cut this week,
Okay.
I guess. And then we'll have durable goods order, and I think it's just going to show that businesses remain very cautious about investment.
Okay, awesome. I'm going to share my screen, just give everyone a quick update. So one, I know you've been working on this with Bruno. So this is, if people haven't seen this, the Trump sentiment dashboard. So kind of the sentiment and his comments on different topics. And this is US tariffs, China on the Fed and Canada. So say US on tariffs in general. Here we're showing the sentiment scoring on Trump. So he's been getting kind of less aggressive around sentiments on tariffs. And then this is the inverted pricing of the S&P. So you can see it's actually been pretty highly correlated all year since the beginning of the year and or basically since becoming president. So that is absolutely still something worth looking at. China is pretty similar, obviously be a little bit more negative, but it's generally, overall, it seems like he's open to doing deals. Obviously, still the numbers on China are pretty high. People haven't seen the overall. So this is amalgamation of all of it in one chart. And it shows obviously the aggressiveness has gone down, but also you kind of see the different breakdown between US, China, Fed, and well, obviously it's not just tariffs on the Fed, and then also his views on Canada. On the event monitor, kind of addressing a lot of
If I could just
the
highlight, I mean, we know that markets are driven by narratives. And what's fantastic with these new indices is that we're starting to get the ability to measure those narratives. I mean, we see a real-time demonstration that this is what's been driving the market.
So absolutely. And seeing that type, that correlation to the S&P is pretty amazing. So obviously I would recommend people to check this out. Also under monitors on the website, I think people have seen the update on the event monitor, and obviously there's a lot more to come as well. Here's a lot of the stuff coming up that you have been mentioning. Here, say if I click on, let's click on Monday. Here's the US manufacturing PMIs. Here's the US service PMIs. We have it on dollar yen for example. So this will have the potential moves. This is say up to a few hours after stuff's released. Here's a historical add-on from what our model has been expecting. Here's the direction. Here's the thing that I like checking out a lot. So this is for next Monday, which markets are kind of underpricing all these events that are coming up on that day. So in this case, things like Stocky, Euro, Sterling, our model is saying that actually volatility is quite cheap for these upcoming events. And that's a mispricing. So, and then here you can actually compare it also to the average of the realized, because I think you want to look at it, basically compared to what the actual realized vol is. But in this case, euro and sterling, even dollar yen seems like interesting trades. And then I remember we will have, if we do, we're going to eventually have it for everyone. We're going to have our Sam's kind of model view in here, and then we will have what the expected move is and the direction of the move. So we're also going to tie in around the direction stuff. But also what I know a bunch of clients have started doing is you have the ability to put your own forecast in, or you have the ability to quickly put in what the actual forecast, which I think several clients started doing. So you put in the actual forecast, of say in this case 48, and you can see what the impact would be on expected moves, and also the impact would be on the direction and the surprise of the move. So in this case, 48 on as an example, US manufacturing PMI would suggest a very big move down in dollar yen. So obviously a much weaker sign on the economy. So it also tells you that this still, like you said, it's still a fairly important thing that the market looks at, especially if you have a significant move away from consensus. So this can certainly be something interesting. And I'll just show a little, this has not been released yet, but just something, if people have views on it, they can reach out to us. But so we've been doing a lot of work on obviously around central banks, and this is also around topics, so topic modeling. So what we're doing is we're looking at what are the key topics. So basically, Dominic, like what obviously, but like what we discuss every Friday, what are the key topics they're talking about? But in this case, we're actually taking it and utilizing the AI across all kind of Fed governor communications. And say, for example, then we'll put in, so the biggest comments are still around inflation, and that's been a big thing, and that's been changing. So obviously still worried about inflation, whether we all agree about that. And then an increasing also, say, in the labor market. Some of this is, it's more of an illustration. And then underneath, you'll be able to compare the sentiment levels across different central banks. So seeing all this together, say BOJ less worried about the labor market weakening and also inflation, where the US is very concerned. So this will hopefully be coming out in the next couple of weeks. Anyone has views on this, it'd be cool to hear. I'll stop sharing.
Very cool, Andrew.
Yeah, and you know, we wish everyone good luck in the markets as always. Please reach out on anything. And Dominic, wish you a nice weekend.
Thank you. Likewise. Good luck,
Sure.
everybody.
Thanks. Bye.